Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. What it do, loyal listeners of the Sports Live podcast? What I've got for you this week, my goodness, great conversation with Henry Olonga, none other than the former Zimbabwean fast bowler who was forced into exile after standing up to the late statesman from Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe's regime back in 2003. We caught up with Henry Olonga. Obviously, the conversation was for New Frame. It was first published for newframe.com. You can go there and get the full article where Henry Olonga talks about how he is quick to tell people that it's not as if he derived any pleasure from seeing Mugabe's death, and that happened earlier this year. Henry Olonga was one of those cricketers who stood up for what was right. In the end, during the 2003 Cricket World Cup, which was co-hosted by Zimbabwe and South Africa, Henry Olonga had to take flight. Yeah, he had to take flight and leave his country, somehow find a way to get to South Africa, get his way out of the continent, where he ended up in England, where pretty much his cricket career died, and he no longer played professional cricket, and he had to find other means to live and survive. And I think his tale is one of the most inspiring tales you will ever hear. Of course, it's very easy to put together revisionist history after the man, Robert Mugabe, has died at the age of 95. But it's also important to hear from the people who actually lived it, who actually lived through Mugabe's regime, through the Zimbabwe that was supposed to be 40 years of freedom and independence since 1980, and hear from them about what the state of our neighbors, the country that is our neighbor, what the state it was in and how they lived. And to hear from someone that now lives in Australia in Adelaide, has two kids, is a stay-at-home dad, who also somehow appeared on a singing show called The Voice and was training worldwide, I think that is an important voice to share with people. And we have the full conversation. And like I said prior, the article you can find on newframe.com. Go to the sports section where you will find that Henry Olonga felt no pleasure when Mugabe died. But here's a full conversation with the former Zimbabwean fast bowler. Well, we've got Henry Olonga via Skype on the line right here for the Sports Live podcast. Now, Henry, we know you from having made a very, very brave protest. Some might call you a hero for standing up to Robert Mugabe's regime. Obviously, I'm talking about the events of the 2003 Cricket World Cup that South Africa co-hosted with Zimbabwe, where you, as well as Andy Flower, a former Zimbabwean cricket captain, put black armbands ahead of a game, ahead of Zimbabwe's first game of the World Cup. And I just wanted to catch up with you and find out, just have a chat and find out if you've managed to be home since those events, since 2003. And obviously we know that Mugabe lost his power not too long ago, and obviously he had passed away this year. Have you been home at all? Have you touched the land of Zimbabwe since you had to flee for your safety and go into exile in 2003?
Oh no, I haven't been back home. I haven't been back home. If I might just make a comment about your statement about me being a hero, I always get very nervous when people use that term with me, because I'm reminded of the kinds of people who lay at the hero's acre. And I know I'm not one of them. I certainly am not one of the people who ever end up there. But when a guy like Chenjerai Hunsvi is there, I use the word hero very sparingly, you know. So, at some point in my life, I decided to make a protest against a regime that I felt was not doing its best for its own people. And I paid a price, and I still, to some extent, pay a price today. There are all sorts of people I interact with on social media platforms, and it's quite a weird thing when members of the public have the barriers taken out of the way where they can have direct access to someone, especially someone like me who's tends to be kind of somewhat private but at the same time public. You know what I mean? I'm happy to interact with people, but I really keep to myself a lot of the time. But in any case, the majority of sentiment out there is not very positive towards me. Whenever I have interactions with Zimbabweans, especially Twitter, Twitter's very public, and I haven't done the maths on the statistics, but at a guess, I would say slightly more than 50% of people on the platform are always gunning for me, man. You might say some very complimentary things, but there's some other people out there who just got nothing but abject, just hatred and a bile to spew my way. Normally on the internet you'd call people like that trolls, but I really don't think these people are trolls, because I don't think they're trying to annoy me. I think they genuinely think that I was mistaken in my protest, that I was deceived, that I was led astray or what have you, and that I was siding with the wrong team or something, or the wrong people. Never giving me credit for being a free-thinking human being who can make his own mind up about the leaders of his country. I think I'm very flattered by you saying that I'm some kind of hero, but by the same token, I'm brought down to earth on a daily basis whenever I interact with other Zimbabweans who have a differing view to yours.
Yeah, that is incredible. You'll find that on social media, a lot of people will definitely use the mic. It's an open mic, and it's not necessarily given to people with the most rational views in the world. But I do get your reservations about, not wanting to be branded a hero, because that does leave one to a lot of interpretations, especially, like you said, people, the hero status might have been tainted because of some of the people that have been put on a pedestal by populist views and stuff like that. And the sad part is that we live in a world where we actually don't recognize people for making courageous stands, whether we agree with them or not. We can't sit back and actually admire the work that they've done and the sacrifices that they've made. And you, Henry, you've made quite a lot of sacrifices leading up to this point. And I want to delve deeper into that tournament and and those events that led you to end up in exile. So tell us what happened as soon as you got to the UK, because career-wise, you pretty much stopped playing, and you'd played roughly around 80 international matches for Zimbabwe as a fast bowler, who could probably nudge a bit, or see himself as a bit of a nudger. We then saw you later on singing, trending online actually, as one of the contestants on The Voice, whereby you regaled one Miss Kelly Rowland, her of Destiny's Child. What an amazing performance that was, first and foremost. And we didn't even know that you had that in you. So take us back to the moment you arrived in the UK, having fled the country for your safety via South Africa, and you got to the UK. And what you'd done most of your life was play cricket. And tell us about the journey from there.
When I first went to the UK, I got involved with a cricket club called the Lashings World 11, and I was with them for about 9 years. And we just basically travelled around the UK primarily, playing at cricket clubs and schools, and the odd county team here and there. But my role in the side changed over the years. First of all, I was a player. I played a lot as a bowler and a somewhat hack of a batsman. We weren't playing the best of opposition, you understand. And then I kind of moved back into commentary. And then I started singing at lunchtimes, because a lot of our matches were fundraisers. We helped people to raise money for charity, etc. So we often had a marquee with corporate, tables bought by people, companies, etc. And so I was part of the entertainment. And so I did that for about, 9 or so years. And then it kind of spun off into me singing a lot more here and there in the UK. And then we emigrated to to Australia. My wife's actually Australian, so she's from here, from Adelaide. And we started a family. We had two daughters, 2010, 2012. And so around about 2015, we decided to come home, as it is in the case of my wife, and settled here. So it was while I was here, I was, asking myself, what do I do next? Of course, I've moved once already from Zimbabwe, started a new life in England, and now I've moved again and started from scratch again. So I fell back onto a lot of the stuff I did in my post cricket life, and I started doing after dinner speaking, and of course throwing a song in there, or throwing a song in here or there. And eventually, one of the things that happened was I was invited to be involved with a charity, and that charity was doing a fundraiser, and that fundraiser happened to be with the South Australian Police Band. So I sung with the band, and then my video or recording of some sort got onto the internet, and then someone from The Voice got in touch with me via emails asking me if I would be willing to partake in their show. I thought it was the England version initially because the email came from ITV.com, so I assumed it was the England side of things. So I apologized and said, "Well, I can't do it. I'm in Australia." And they said, "No, it's the Australian one." And so I then went through the rigmarole of applying, of course, and the rest is history. So I went to the blind, of course. I turned three chairs, ended up with Kelly Rowland, and survived for three shows, and then got booted off. So it's that kind of show, If your coach doesn't really believe in you, they choose someone else. So I guess that's what happened. And so I came home, and I've started, venturing more and more into that world. I'm hopefully producing some music that'll get airplay soon. And when I say airplay, I mean YouTube. I'm not likely to be on radio. I'm also doing a concert coming up with the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra, and then after that another concert with the police band, and then after that one with the army band, and then another with the Adelaide Harmony Choir. So things are picking up, but I'm still not able to say this is my job and I earn a living from it. I'd like a few more gigs. So, with that in mind, I'm always, open to singing more. There might come a time when I'm turning opportunities down, but at this point in time, that isn't the case. So, what do I do with myself? Well, I'm a stay-at-home dad. I deal with the kids. My wife is a full-time teacher, so she, as it were, earns the bacon, and I, in typical musician fan, try to fulfill my dreams by making music, being broke most of the time, and trying to sell records,
Now, Henry, this year, did see the passing of the late Zimbabwean statesman Robert Mugabe, and I know we are engaging in a bit of revisionist history a little after the fact, but I would like to know from you what your actual feelings were when you heard the news that Robert Mugabe has passed away, and having passed away in a manner that a lot of people would find a little bit of a disgrace because he did not find sufficient health care in his own country. One might say he was culpable for the decline of the health care system in Zimbabwe. One might also go so far as to say that there was a lot of embarrassment in the way he bowed out of power, having been backstabbed by one of his key allies, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is now the president. And he ended up voting for his opposition, the Movement for Democratic Change. He voted against his own ZANU-PF party at his last election, which is kind of symbolic of how far down he had fallen in terms of power, so badly trying to cling on to power that he hated his own party. But I just want to know from you, as a person who received, you wrote in your book that your dad even gave you a call saying that you need to run to safety. There were people telling your dad that your life is in grave danger, and there was a point where you thought you might be arrested, whereby you might be charged and tried for treason for that Ambad protest. And as we know in Zimbabwe, treason carries a death sentence, and that is the fate that you were facing. And when you heard from Adelaide that Robert Mugabe has passed away, what went through your mind and what did you feel? If you can just tell us and get the emotions of it, the thoughts, and whether, you know, there's any cause to celebrate.
Well, it's an interesting question. And you know, I'm very, very quick to tell people that it's not as if I derived any kind of pleasure from it, because a lot of people think that I would have had some sense of relief or some sense of closure or some sense of justice. But I have no idea what your listenership is, but some people may know that I'm a very committed Christian, and I'm also someone who's very vocal about my faith, and I would consider myself somewhat of an evangelist, if you will. And the charity I mentioned earlier that I did the music for and sung at their concert is called Second Chances SA, and it's a charity that works in prisons, and I often travel to prisons. There are two main prisons that I speak in, and I speak to the prisoners about turning a new leaf and changing their path and you know, rerouting the path of their life. And ultimately, for me, I've always understood that the message of hope that the universe offers to anyone is that you can truly turn things around. You can be a murderer, you can be a thug, you know, you can be a thief, you can be a violent man, but if you know, if you're willing, you can be changed. And ultimately, the sadness for me is that Mugabe probably died a man who took all his misdeeds with him to the other side. Now, he left behind many victims too. Estimates range from 30,000 to many tens of thousands of people who were murdered under his command in the early 80s in Zimbabwe. So he has a lot of blood on his hands. But it gives me no pleasure for the death of a man like him, because I know that what awaits on the other side is not pleasant for anyone, and you would not wish it upon your worst enemy. Having said that, you know, I certainly hope that for all of his victims, it brings them some kind of closure. You know, he didn't face justice, however. You know, if in a funny kind of way, he died a very embittered man in a foreign country. He couldn't even die in his own country. Whether that's a testament to the failing healthcare system he left behind that couldn't even treat him, or whether it was because he felt so hurt that his deputy Mnangagwa took over from him in a way that he felt was a backstabbing move, I'm not so sure. But it's kind of weird, isn't it, how towards the end of his life he did some things that were very telling. One of the things he did was he voted in his last election for the opposition that he'd fought for 20 or so years. I mean, that was just the most extraordinary thing when I read about that, that Mugabe was endorsing the MDC in his last election that he voted in. And in addition, you know, he tried his hand at farming and he failed at that. So for all his moves to talk about giving, you know, land to landless blacks and empowering them, probably one of the wealthiest men in the country could not make farming work for him. Isn't that quite telling? And he died a bitter man. You know, he went to the grave just hurt by the fact that he was, in inverted commas, backstabbed. And yet the weird thing is that's exactly what he did throughout his life. Throughout his life, he showed no mercy to anyone who opposed him. I'm in exile because of Mugabe. He effectively made it untenable for me to stay in Zimbabwe if I wanted to stay alive, or if I wanted to live a comfortable life, you know, that didn't result in me being imprisoned for some crime I never committed. So, you know, you reap what you sow. And Robert Mugabe has a legacy that is very divisive. People on social media were on the one hand, very happy. Other people who were supporters of his were very sad and broken. There was the argument about whether to bury him at the Heroes Acre or at his home village. And then Malema stepped in. I can't believe that a politician from South Africa can have such power that he got the government of Zimbabwe to cede their demands of putting him at the hero's acre. And then, of course, the whole thing has come to an end. Now, one of the things I'd like to see, however, is his wife face justice. She ultimately did some terrible things to a lot of people, and that if that arrest warrant is true, I would be one of the people who would be very happy to see her face the law in South Africa for what she did.
My goodness, fascinating, fascinating insights, Henry. I really, really appreciate your time. And that last bit you said about, Grace Mugabe having to come to South Africa if indeed the assault charges were true, she would definitely need to face justice. But we obviously don't work for the Justice Department. But we can only put our opinions out there, which is what this platform is for. And I do appreciate your views very. Very important and very sober views, and I really think that a lot of people will listen to this, who will read the story that is on newframe.com, will soak in the information soberly and put aside some of the social media diatribe, if I can put it like that, and really, really take in the information and possibly even learn something from this conversation. But I have to say, I've been utterly fascinated, and I really, really appreciate your time, taking time out from your life in Adelaide to talk to us via Skype. That's it from me, Sbu Mjikeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the TESOL Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ndloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the Sports Live podcast, it's goodbye for now.